So good afternoon, everyone, and we do recognize we're the only thing between you and a break. So we promise to be efficient, and where we can't be efficient, we will at least be comical. So don't take us too seriously, but we do have this. I agree with Devendra in terms of we have a relatively star-studded panel here. So what's going to happen is I'm going to introduce each panelist, and then I'm going to ask them to not only tell you who they are, but also help you to understand what their role is with respect to digitalization in their organization. And so, panelists, what I'm going to ask you to do is at least tell them one area of focus that you have in your organization around digitalization. And as we've discussed previously, we want to take it out of the 35,000 feet area. We want to bring it down to where the rubber actually meets the road. So we'll start first with Stefan.
Okay, my name is Stefan Braun. I'm the managing director of SmartCE. I'm coming from Munich, and we work on the digital cold chain to make the cold chain more greener and more efficient and minimize temperature excursions. That is what my company is doing in this field.
Antonio Menendez, I'm the head of commercial supply chain in Exelixis. In addition to overseeing the end-to-end supply chain of commercial supply chain, I do also oversee the process transformation, which includes digital projects and digital transformation in the company.
Neeraj.
Hello, everyone. My name is Neeraj Shah, and I'm the founder and the managing partner of Boston Insights. Boston Insights, we are focused on one single mission, which is to transform the clinical supply chain. So we basically help trial sponsors or the pharmaceutical companies to transform the way they are working on clinical supply chain.
Last but not least, Bharat.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bharat Sundararaman, easiest name in the house. I'm the general manager of supply chain collaboration at TraceLink, who is a global market leader in track and trace. Most of you here in the room may not know it, but you're customers of TraceLink, I guarantee you. And I focus on supply chain visibility and collaboration and hope to talk to you more about it. Thank you.
Okay. So phrases that we've heard today, we've talked about sustainable supply chains, we've heard about cold chain, we've heard about digital twins, so forth. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to you first, Stefan. I'm going to ask you if you would help the audience to understand what's this relationship between a sustainable supply chain, particularly with a focus on trying to minimize carbon footprints, and digital transformation in the cold chain space.
Yeah. That's a good question. So we do digital twins since 10 years now, and worked a lot in Corona crisis, ship something from A to B and make it safe as possible. And 2 years ago, I gave also a talk here. And after my talk, Jeff from Gillette comes to us and say, can you not apply these digital twins to minimize our carbon footprint, to switch from active containers to blankets? And I said, yeah, sure. How many lanes? 1,100 lanes when you can do it. And we did it in 3 months. So this is something what you can never do in the real world with testing to give safe conditions for your product, look at the carbon footprint, and make it cost effective. And then the interesting part, as you heard in the talk before, it costs you not more. If you make the planning more precise with a digital twin, you can really save costs and get the carbon footprint for free. That is what I see a main value out of this digital transformation. It costs you not more if you have the data in one hand. That's my learnings.
So let's repeat that. 1,100 lanes.
Yes.
In 3 months.
In 3 months, yes.
In 3 months.
In 3 months.
Three real months.
Yeah, three real months. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's a very long time to do that.
No. You know, you have to wait for summer and winter and 1,100 lanes. So this takes you, I don't know, a life. So that is what you can speed up in the digital world much faster.
And I would imagine one of the questions that comes up is how realistic are those estimates? How do they compare to reality?
So realistic like your test. So the same level of accuracy, but you do it faster and with more precise predictions.
Right.
And you save thousands of tons of carbon by making a better planning.
Right.
And beside the money, but it's really something what pays off and goes fast.
You and I were talking during one of the coffee breaks also, and you were talking about the amount of time that it takes to test a box and what that actually does for the impact on the environment.
Totally. You know, if you test a box to qualify a box, it's 2 tons of carbon. If you do this in the digital world, okay, it takes 5 minutes and saves a lot of carbon from the energy from your computer. That's it.
So if I'm putting these together, what you're telling me is you can help an organization move closer towards their ESG goals while at the same time reducing the cost of the operations and also being more efficient with greater transparency.
Yeah, exactly.
I should be your salesperson.
That's just right. We should have a talk in the coffee about this. No. But I think the main point is why people are so hesitant in cold chain, because products should be safe, and that's the most critical part. But how much over-engineering you should put in? If you know your supply chain very well and you know your box very well, you can reduce the level of protection to a level that is good enough. This was the project with Jeff. Okay, go from active container to a blanket. It's a dramatic switch. You know, but if you know your product and your supply chain, you can do this. And you save 350 kilograms by each transport, air freight, on a large number, that's impact.
Okay.
And that's data supports you.
Perfect. So, Antonio, I'm going to come to you next. Okay. So one of the things that we previously talked about is what's the benefit of planning solutions, and how do you ensure that they integrate with your existing internal solutions for the purpose of driving your digitalization efforts?
Sure. Even before I get there, let me pivot a little bit the answer. And first of all, I will encourage everybody, and I'm pretty sure that all of you know this, but we sometimes forget that one of the things that we have to do first is just make sure that we understand the strategy, understand what we really want to solve, and really take time to understand where we are in terms of the current state, what is the people, current capabilities, what are the gaps, what are the process capabilities, and what are the gaps, and then think about the tools, right? We get caught up in the moment sometime and get too excited about a tool that may look like it's gonna solve our lives, but maybe our processes and the people are not ready for it, right? So that would be my first step. Please, it's kind of obvious, but sometimes we forget about those steps. Of course, once we got that, what we want, at the end of the day, all of us are in the biopharmaceutical industry, we wanna make sure that patients receive the drug on time. So we wanna make sure that we can build a planning process that can help us to be more agile, reactive, and that we can accelerate decision-making with data-driven information, right? So at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Would anyone else like to add to that?
No, I agree. I completely agree. Like, jumping onto a solution is not the right approach. I feel the strategy, the process, because if you have a bad process, what the systems are going to do, whether it's a planning system or any system for that matter, they are going to make your process, 10 times worse. So I think that is very, very critical. I would completely agree with you.
So if I remember doing one of our prep calls, one of the things that we were all in agreement is that it's the emerging technologies that's the shiny new thing.
Yeah.
And it grabs our attention. But one of the things I believe we all discuss is that we have to consider the status of our operational backbone.
Correct.
Those core solutions that we depend on, it's easy to ignore, but that becomes the linchpin, or really the Achilles heel with many digitalization efforts. Can you speak to where you've seen that play out? Would you like to jump in?
Yeah, look, before TraceLink, I've been at TraceLink for near 5 years now, but before TraceLink, I was one of you. I spent 10 years at Merck KGaA, not to be confused with the previous speaker, Tim, from Merck MSD. And at Merck KGaA, I led the digital supply chain effort. There's Tim right there. So very similar to the program you presented, Tim, on your first slide about end-to-end supply chain visibility or limited supply chain visibility. That's essentially what I was chasing for a decade at Merck, and I realized TraceLink had all the data because they have 1,500 plus customers. So why I bring that up is that we talk a lot about tools, we talk a lot about AI, we speak a lot about generative AI, new buzzword, but without data, there's no data science. And the data is not all available and not within your four walls. It's across a number of partners and suppliers that work with you to get the product to the patient. So my angle on this, Randy, is that digital transformation and AI and all of this magic doesn't happen without the foundation, and the foundation is in getting all the data in one place, and that's where I would encourage people to start building that foundation.
I love that, and if I remember correctly, been at some of your company's events, there's this common theme about it's about one patient. We talk about these patients in aggregate, but in reality, as Devendra started this morning, he said, because life begins with us, and I like to take that a step further, it actually starts with you. And what I mean by that, I'm not talking about the concept of conception, but what I'm saying is when we look at the pharmaceuticals, the therapeutics that have to make their way, it all starts with what we do in the lab. And so I love this notion of thinking about the one patient and how do we get it all the way to the end of the value chain, if you will. Okay? All right, so let's shift a little bit and talk about it from a clinical supply chain perspective. So Neeraj, help bring this together for us.
So as we've been talking about data, so as I said, we are working on transforming the way we run clinical supply chain. And what do I mean by that? So, you know, in the last like couple of decades, right, 20, 25 years, if you see, there hasn't been a lot of change in the way we have been doing. Yes, there have been some incremental changes in the way, you know, how IRT operates, there are some new systems, but fundamentally things have not changed. And if we really want to have a disruptive innovation, right, not just incremental, what we really need to think is from a data perspective. And what we are doing is, what is really lacking in the system, few things that we are addressing today, which is end-to-end visibility, because visibility costs you a lot, which you may not realize in the short term, if not having visibility. So creating end-to-end visibility of your supply chain. We've been talking about supply chain resilience this morning, and we talked about a supply chain framework. So that is a big piece, especially after COVID, you know, because we have, you know, distributed manufacturing, we have distributed trials going on across the globe. So what you really need is a very robust risk management system. When I say system means it's just not like, don't think about it as a software. System means comprehensive a process and a way that you can track your risk. Right, for example, an early warning system that will let you know what's going on. And you also have a mechanism to respond to those risks. It's not just like making aware, right? Awareness is fine, but how do you respond? How do you track to your mitigation? So risk management, I think in the given global space that we are operating in, the changes in the geopolitical situation that is happening every day, risk management, I feel, is very, very critical. Everybody needs to think about it because that could disrupt your supplies. And of course, we talked about planning a little bit. What happens is there's a slew of planning system today. You know, different companies use different planning systems. Some are satisfied, some are not so satisfied. But one of the key things is visibility into your demand. You know, there's a lot of demand variability in clinical supply chain, as you all know. How do we make that visible real time? How do you make visible your supply situation real time? And how do you do, you know, like, how do you predict what happened? How could you do, like, what if analysis if I were to reduce my inventory by 5%, or if my demand goes up by 5% in the next 3 months, how am I going to react to that? I think these are some things that are very, very critical, and we need to make those decisions almost like real time, because things are changing so fast, you cannot really plan for everything. So you need to have that data, and again, I'll talk about the data very quickly, that before you get into this, absolutely think about your entire ecosystem, your value stream, okay? You should think about what's your value stream end to end, what are your systems inside the enterprise, what are your systems outside the enterprise, and what are the things or what are events that impact your supply chain? Basically, that's your ecosystem. How do you bring the data in, right? So that you have good quality data available at the right time. Because if you think about it today, in order to just get all this information, it takes days. For example, when the Ukraine-Russia war started, there were so many companies struggling to figure out what is the impact on their clinical supply chain, how many patients are impacting. Can we get that data in like less than, you know, 1 minute? And then we also see what is the impact on your supply chain, and then we decide how we want to react to it. So I would say data is obviously foundational, but you know, going to generative AI and all that is later. I'm also at a very basic person, right? I want to make sure there's visibility, I'm able to manage my risk, and then of course, we talk about predictive, we talk about prescriptive, all of that.
So I love it. So what I'm gonna embark, I know you were ready to come in, and I was gonna go to you anyway. So when we talk about this notion of ensuring that we have the right data, and I love the inside out and outside in, it's not just about what we do within the walls of our own enterprise. Speak more, if you could, to the importance of really making sure that all of your trading partners are on board, because if we all don't evolve, none of us evolve.
Right. Yeah, you read my mind, Randy. You're predictive, because I was going to jump in, especially around, you know, what do we mean when we say end-to-end? End-to-end is often abused as a buzzword, right? end-to-end, one definition I've heard that I like is from your suppliers, suppliers, to your customers, customers. Now think about it from the clinical supply chain standpoint. We heard Barbara from Allogene speak this morning about, I can't take my supplier lead times for granted, and I cannot overstock inventory. We heard Stuart from Illumina drop the F-bomb, firefighting. Not what you're thinking. And he was speaking in the context of, I have multiple tiers of suppliers. Why do I firefight? Because I don't know what's happening 2-3 tiers out. How do I get that visibility? I could give you hundreds of examples, but the point is, as long as you're just operating within the four walls of your company and you don't have visibility into what's happening on your network, what are your contract manufacturers doing? What are your suppliers doing? Are they able to fulfill your purchase order? Are they going to ship on time? Do they have enough inventory? I was speaking to somebody at Bob, I think, from Arcus Biosciences. I was asking, you guys are a phase three company. Do you do everything in-house? And they said, no, the opposite. We rely on a lot of partners. When you outsource, you lose control. When you lose control, you lose visibility. So how are you managing your supply chain when a lot of the action is happening with the partners that you outsource to? So the punchline here is that I've come to learn the hard way from my experience at Merck that doing things within the company's four walls is good, but as long as you're stuck inside the four walls and you lack visibility to partners and suppliers, you're going to be limited in your ability to getting the products to patients. And that's what is my sole purpose, focus, mission, aim at TraceLink, is to help different companies on the life sciences network, on the industry, connect and collaborate with each other so that we can truly chase this buzzword of end-to-end supply chain visibility.
So, Antonio, if you would add to this more so from now, we've got this outside in. What about the inside out in terms of when you look at the various stakeholders within your own organization? How can we take that and mimic the same approach?
Yeah, and actually, I would say that sometimes that's the more difficult one, because typically, although we are the same organization, sometimes we have different priorities, and people may be a little bit hesitant to share data, right? So to your point about data, of course, it's very important to clarify and define data points of each of the different areas and understand the impact to each other. One of the things that we're trying to do currently is defining those type of steps internally and creating control towers, but internally. And we call it a control tower with, for example, the clinical group was doing that with clinical operations, just trying to understand the enrollment rates and those type of things, because sometimes, although we are in the same company, we may not be sharing that information. So how can we break those walls internally, operate together? And it goes back to what I said initially, what is the strategy? But really, what is the strategy of the company? And are we moving all in the same direction? And just build together a process that can help everybody to achieve that goal.
So earlier today, Ranjan, in his talk, and he was talking about the importance of having a data strategy, which is totally different than your digital and different from your analytic strategy. So I'm going to come to you now, Stefan.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you to talk about data strategies.
No, okay.
But what I am going to ask you to speak to is when you think about the clients that you have worked with, there's a multitude of data sources that you require in order to assist them. And oftentimes, there is no one group, entity, or individual that controls or governs that data. So what's your approach, or how have you seen organizations navigate those challenges?
Well, that's a complicated question, to be honest. We try to get all the data from the different streams, from the forwarders, about their supply chains. We use data from weather stations around the world, from satellites to see what is the impact of the sun when you're sitting on a tarmac on your package. So with all these sources, you get really a good picture of what can happen. And sometimes you're also surprised that we made some real tests. We ship something from A to B, from Singapore to Germany, and we was surprised how the forwarder handled it when you put a real-time device on it and see how the real data looks like. And this gives you a lot of insights, and you bring it back in your digital twins,
right,
and get more learnings out of this.
Right.
Yes.
I love it, because a lot of times we'll get caught in the verbiage of having a single source of truth. And in my experience, what that means is we've just decided what to trust. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's trustworthy. We just agreed that that's what we're going to trust. And I think what I'm hearing from you is what we really should be after is multiple perspectives of the truth. Because totally. Now you're triangulating from all those sources what reality is.
I think what also important is to understand that sometimes data is really missing. And make reasonable assumptions about what is missing, to be open to accept we have not all the data, and put the people in and ask for the experience what they see on their supply chain as critical points.
Okay, all right. Yep. Anyone else want to add to this?
Yeah, I would like to add to this point is, before you decide what data is needed, what decisions you want to make, I think you really need to keep your value stream right in front of you, your business process, as we've been talking about. Because when you talk about business process, you know, to execute that business process, you are using some sort of a system. It could be Excel, but it is still a system, right? And it generates data. So you really need to understand what data you are generating, you know, from what source. And you need to build that like somewhat like a data flow diagram to understand what are the systems you have, what data is generated, how that data is changing. It's very, very important to understand that. Only then you can model the data and you can basically enrich the data with your new models to be able to create things like control towers and make those decisions. Because if you don't have a good understanding of your data, I'm not talking about the data quality, that comes later, you know, that is more transactional, but what I'm saying is a fundamental understanding of your business process, which is value stream, you know, when you start from, you know, demand planning, or, you know, you're starting with forecasting all the way up to, I'm sorry, all the way up to reconciliation, you know, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I will say also
I got
that,
too excited.
I will encourage people also to keep it very simple, right? Sometimes we want to think very complex, and the solution can be simpler. With respect to my colleagues, not all the time we need a big tool, right? I would encourage to do that, because one of the things that we have accomplished faster, like low-hanging fruit, have come with very basic tools, right? So always think about what you can do simple first, and then later maybe evaluate something bigger than can be
the useful. Agile process,
yeah, exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, one thing just to add, Randy, I always put myself in the shoes of the audience, right? So you guys are sitting here all day hearing about supply chain resilience, digital transformation, Gen AI, data is your foundation, you need data strategy. But your day jobs are not necessarily all of these things, right? You go back to your day job, you're looking at 100 emails from 20 suppliers on, are they going to take my PO? Are they going to deliver the product? Is my 3PL going to get it out of time? So there's all this day-to-day struggle that you're dealing with. And you come to conferences, and you hear people wearing suits and talk the big buzzwords. So I think we have to do a better job in closing this gap to say, OK, if you're dealing with a lot of Excel, nothing to be ashamed of. Excel is supply chain's best friend. We all know that. But how do we go from using different Excel files in different parts of your supply chain to start to help connect the dots? Where can you start within your organization to take that first few steps to get better control and visibility? And then as you expand on that, you can figure out what tools, software, systems to put on top of that. Mm-hmm. But I think that's something we need to figure out. And it can happen through Q&A here, you know, afterwards in the cocktail hour. But we really need to start talking about how do we close this gap, and how do we go from Excels everywhere in email to some semblance of control and visibility before we take the big leap.
That's a very, very good point. I want to remind those of you who are here, you have the Wolva app, correct? So one of the things we like to do is we like to take your questions and sort of work them into the panel. So rather than passing the mic around, if you go to the Wolva app, open this particular session, hit questions, and then you can ask and pose your question. And if you're shy, you can just wait for someone else to post it and just like it or upvote it. And we'll pick up on it, and we'll work that into the conversation as we begin to wrap up. So I want to go to something that we talked about this in the prep call, and we didn't know if we would actually have time to get here, but we're already here. You guys have been extremely efficient with your answers and the time, so therefore you get to answer more questions.
Great.
So,
that was not the plan.
So I don't want to go back to where you left off, Gareth, because it really is about the starting point, and then it's also about how do we get and maintain traction, because these digital journeys are not short. As much as people would like to make us believe that that is not the reality, so sometimes it is possible that we start to lose interest when we don't see results fast enough that are big enough. So. We got our own
lovely
music. I was about to say something extremely enlightening.
Breaking the ice.
So if you would, weigh in from that perspective, how would you encourage someone, whether they're in a small, medium, or large enterprise, how do you, one, get started, and two, how do you maintain traction?
Yeah, I'll give two examples, one from my days at Merck and one with Tracelink. So from a Merck standpoint, the way we started was to say, what is the most important priorities for supply chain? Let's just speak to the supply chain function. It could be OTIF, that's struggling. It could be inventory, that's way more than what should be carried. Maybe it's the delivery from your suppliers or from your partners or your contract manufacturers, whatever it is, right? Start with the most important business objective and then figure out what basic visibility can you put in place that can help improve the control over that process. And that's what we did at Merck for the first few years. Nothing sexy, nothing fancy, no AI, just basic tools to get everybody visibility into what's happening with the business, so leaders didn't have to wait 4 weeks for a whole bunch of Excel massaging to be done before they could even look at what's going on. Okay, so that's one place to start before jumping into big bang solutions and Gen AI and all of that. The second thing I would say from a Tracelink standpoint, what I'm doing every day with my customers is that Tracelink has already built a network of 300,000 companies exchanging track and trace information, serial numbers. The companies exist, the network exists, the exchange is already happening. What I'm telling my customers is, you're already trusting me with the most sacred information about your business. Every single serial number that you produce, use that same network, same connection to now exchange a purchase order, to exchange an invoice, to exchange inventory position, to exchange your forecast. Keep it simple. Try one partner at a time. Don't go big. See how that works. See if that helps. And then scale from there. So these are two examples, Randy.
Perfect. Thank you. Neeraj.
So I think this is going to be a whole agile approach, right? One aspect I want to bring in addition is the maturity of your organization and your team. You know, because it's one thing to have a new solution or the cool solution, but is your team ready to adopt that solution? You know, because change management is a big piece of it, and there I agree, like, you know, you have to understand the maturity of your team and how that maturity curve is moving and manage the change. Because, you know, definitely keep it simple, keep it slow, and do it in an agile approach, because a lot of times we say we want it perfect, and that's not the right approach. Use an agile approach. As long as it is good enough, I think that's the way, and you do multiple iterations, because every time you'll have a system, there'll be a learning, right? There'll be a learning curve, and there'll be things that you will like about it, there'll be things that you'll not like about it, there'll be user feedback. So take that user feedback very seriously and continue to improvise on that. That has helped me, because I've been in the industry for 18 years, you know, and I've seen that, you know, using the agile approach definitely gives you a lot of premium.
And just one thing to add, specifically, if any of you are looking at this digital transformation journey and are interested, I can share with you my 10-year journey at Merck, starting from a big fat Excel to applying AI and machine learning year over year. Just walk you through the journey. How did it start? How did it go? Where did we fail? What tools did we use? Happy to share the full journey. Happy to talk to you, talk to your team. So use me as you wish. Right?
I want to go back to something. I like saying numbers multiple times because I think it resonates with the people who fall asleep once we start talking amongst ourselves. So if I heard you correctly, it was a 10-year journey, not a 1-year journey, nor a 2-year journey,
nope.
But a 10-year journey.
Yep.
So because that is something that is a huge misconception in the industry. Oftentimes what we will hear is it's going to be a 2-year journey. And what that usually means is that's focusing on a single process and only certain aspects of that process. And when you consider that you have about 3 to 4 core processes, that gets you to that 10-year journey. So really it's about putting this in perspective. It's about bite-sized chunks. It's not about making rash decisions. I have this saying that I make, which is rash decisions lead to premature endings. So let's be extremely careful about how we invest and what we choose to invest in. Antonio, we'll come to you now in terms of how would you advise someone who's trying to get started, giving them some tactical, realistic examples.
Yeah, and I go back to what I said at the beginning about strategy, right? And to be very transparent, I'm going to share a lesson learned that we have in our company. So we are a small size company, right? So we thought that we were ready to kind of go into implementation of big tools. And we took the risk to go and do an ERP implementation followed by a planning tool implementation. And honestly, we were too aggressive. And we realized later exactly what you were saying. Okay, we should slow down, really focus on small wins, and really focus on things that we can accomplish quickly that makes sense for us. Right, so I go back to that. Just make sure that you really understand what are you trying to solve, what it makes sense for you and your company where it is today, and then make a decision based on that and create a roadmap. Create a roadmap of things that can be done in the next couple of years, which are not that huge endeavors, and then later on maybe you're ready for more, something bigger.
So Stefan, I'm gonna ask you to answer the same question but from a different perspective.
Yeah.
If I'm coming to you as a potential client,
yeah,
and I just heard about this cool approach that you have, right? So okay. I'm enamored by the fact that it's cool.
Yeah.
How would you help me to take a step back and have a more realistic approach of engaging with you?
No, that's an interesting question. Yeah, sure. I think what is super important is to look at your data and look at the quality of your data. So what do you know about your supply chain and get a realistic picture what you have and get a realistic picture what you can receive out of this data. Because what often people overlook is if you have not a good information about the supply chain, you cannot not expect spectacular results. You should go all the one step back and get from this digital twin informations what information is missing, what information you need more in detail. But this is sometimes also learning for our customers. Yes, you need also to train your people to put in the right information. Otherwise, you get nothing really good out.
Okay. So there's one question from the audience here that I believe is directed to you, but of course anyone else, feel free to weigh in here. It has more to do with temperature excursions and when they occur relative to a product being in transit. What would you consider to be a timely intervention when there is an excursion?
What do you mean a timely intervention?
I don't know.
So yeah, that's interesting. I think the main idea from a digital approach is to minimize this to zero, to avoid this. So because if the excursion happens, then you're too late. The main point is, yes, you can intervene and say, oh, we have a predictive thing, put in a warehouse and these things. But the basic for me is make a robust planning at the beginning. If you have a digital supply chain, you can really try out the things. And the goal is to have no excursions. Because that is what I see as a main of a digital approach. Because you play with all the scenarios, you know what happens on a tarmac, what happens if you miss a flight. So, and if you put this in, you have always a plan ABC. And in Corona, we had always plans up to set, what can happen if you miss a flight, if Chinese New Year is coming, and all these things. And if you have really a good picture of your supply chain, you can minimize to zero. That's it, I would say.
Bart, would you like to add to that? That's right in your wheelhouse, minimizing, or at least being aware what a potential excursion is likely to manifest.
Yeah, the reason I don't want this to sound like a TraceLink commercial, so I'm trying to be conscious of that. But the reason I moved to TraceLink is because of the network, because they have visibility into data across, you know, hundreds of thousands of companies, right? That's why I got attracted to TraceLink. And one of the things we did with that visibility to get predictive and to get ahead of issues before they happen is we actually predict drug shortages 90 days before. It may sound crazy. If I were you, I wouldn't believe me. It's true, I'd be skeptic, but we're able to do things like that. So again, it all goes back to putting the time and effort to get the data from your internal sources and external sources, as Tim, you mentioned as well in your talk, different data sources. Once you get that and you have a good hang on that, then you can go put in these alarms or alerts or predictive capabilities, but no foundation, no prediction.
Perfect. So I'm gonna come back to each panelist now. Neeraj, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. So talking about the digital transformation, I know the audience heard like 10 years and then you heard 2 years. So what I want to clarify is it is a journey. Definitely it is 5-year, 10-year journey, right? It doesn't happen in a day. But what is also important is also from an operational perspective, as you say, you guys all have a day job, right? Mm-hmm. And you have pressures from your management, just like the CEOs of the company have pressure from Wall Street to deliver every quarter. I think that is the game plan. plan for every quarter. What is the low-hanging fruit? You have to identify your low-hanging fruit. What can you deliver in the next two quarters? And then as you firm up what you're going to deliver in the next two quarters, you start planning for the third quarter, then the fourth quarter. Because if you are doing this, there'll not be frustration in the organization, because if you have invested a couple of million dollars and that's not yielding any ROI, your funding is going to stop. Right, so you have to identify what is the low-hanging fruit, what did you solve this quarter, then plan for your next quarter, and the next quarter, and that way you will see four quarters flew away, right, and then the next four quarters, and then you'll see 3 years have gone, and you'll gradually see that transformation happening. So that is important. Don't think, oh, it's a 10-year thing, we can't do it in short term, in the short run, right? So it's small cycles, small increments. It could be even like a big technology that you're implementing. It could be AI, but pick a very, very small use case, right, that you can solve in this one quarter, and then build it further, then build it further. Then you will see the funding coming along, the trust being developed with your leadership.
I'm so glad you came back to that about picking a specific use case, because one of the common questions we hear, and I think we may have heard it throughout today, is where should I start? What are the use cases? And I find that odd, because that's like me going to someone else outside of my business and telling me, where do I have problems in my business? Your use cases are internal. Mm-hmm. If you don't know your use cases, I don't know your use cases. Yeah. But I'll make up one for you. If you really can't find one, we will find one.